Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
I mean, what's Pro Football Focus doing? Last week they had Brady. This week they got Brady.
We're doing it. We're literally doing it differently from everybody else.
As a matter of fact, moving forward from this point on, I will not make reference to PFL.
Ready to get into it?
Yeah.
All right. We're going team by team. I would be very careful with manslinging stuff. Am I going to get sued?
Are we going legal on this?
I like football. I like football season and all the things that go with it.
All right, welcome into the PFF NFL podcast. Wednesday, July the 19th. No Steve Palazzolo today, but we're joined by expert opinion for the first time ever, maybe, on this podcast. And we're going to start talking some injuries. So, Vic Troja, yeah. Welcome to the show. Yeah, and, you know, Dr. Monson's not going to cut it anymore. Dr. Palazzolo certainly isn't. So, we've decided to find somebody that actually knows what they're talking about when it comes to injuries.
Well, thanks for having me. I hope I can live up to all the expectations that you guys are setting for me here.
All right. Well, why don't you give us a little rundown of who you are and why we should listen to you when it comes to injuries.
Right. I'm some schmuck from the street. So my name is Vic Troja, and I am a physical therapist, nutritional therapist, and personal trainer actually here in Cincinnati. And ex-collegiate high school football player, been dealing with injuries pretty much my whole life, whether I'm feeling them or I'm treating them.
Right.
And right now, I really specialize in treating some higher-end athletes. And being a fan of football, I can combine both worlds. And so I can look at the injuries, look at the success rate of people after the rehab with them, and then kind of see them get back on field and return to play.
Yeah, so I think this will be a fun show. We're going to talk a little bit about, you know, some general higher level thoughts about injuries, which are the ones to be worried about, which are relatively routine these days. And then we'll get into some specific players as well. I asked Twitter which players, you know, people would like to hear about, and it makes you realize how many players get injured in any given year. Like, right. Just the number of guys that people were asking about, and every time it was like, yeah, that would be a good one, we should talk about him. Right. And this show would be, you know, 5 hours long if we hit all of them. The chat box on YouTube as well, I'm sure can type in some suggestions as well, and we'll see who we get to.
Right.
We'll try and cover as many as we can. We're not going to get to them all because there's just too many, but that is the unfortunate reality of football. Is
it's true,
man. It's an attritional sport, and we're seeing it already. Like, Jared Davis goes down with a torn ACL, done for the year, and we're not even — training camp opened yesterday.
No kidding. And it just, you know, it's hard to track and hard to keep follow of. But the one thing you got to see is that injuries don't pick people, you know. It doesn't matter if you're the starting quarterback or if you're a third string linebacker, you know, they'll hit, and they hit every team. So you just kind of got to stay on top of it and know their timeline and recovery.
So before we get into it, we got to tell people that the PFF NFL podcast is sponsored by the good people at Western and Southern Financial Group. While you focus on your roster moves, Western and Southern helps advance your money moves. Buying your first home, planning to start a family, wondering how to make your money grow, Western and Southern's playbook of life insurance, investment, and retirement solutions helps you rest assured on game day. Team up to understand needs and address goals with a game plan built just for you. Get started at westernsouthern.com/PFF. That's westernsouthern.com/PFF. So let's start with first question. Is there such a thing as injury prone people, right? Because I think everybody can remember, you know, certain players who just seem to constantly get hammered by injuries. But there's also players who seem to have a completely clean bill of health all the way through college or all the way through a certain point in their NFL, and then just keep picking up injury. Is this, like, is it, are there people that are genetically prone to just getting more banged up time after time, or is it one thing that just starts a cascade event and that first injury is going to create the next three because of, you know, compensation mechanisms, like leaning on something else to try and offset the injury? Or, you know, does one thing start it, or are people just a ticking time bomb sometimes?
Yeah, you know, this has been debated a lot in the medical field. You know, you'll have certain people say absolutely not. I do believe people are injury prone. And the reason I say that is because there's so many studies about recurrence, right? Like, once you sprain your ankle, the recurrence rate goes up like 25%, right? So you have certain injuries that, yeah, you may not genetically start as somebody who, like, if you and I walking down the street, you're more likely to roll your ankle than me. But when you get into like the physical demands of football, you really put to test the anatomy of somebody, how they're built, tighter muscles, compensation, those type of things. And I think they are injury prone. I think people are more susceptible. It just really depends on one, the situation, and two, on the person themselves and how their body is. You know, one of the best examples I look at is, like, look at Rashad Penny. He didn't have an injury all through college.
Right.
He goes to the NFL and it's been nonstop.
Guy can't catch a break.
Lower extremity injuries, right? There's some thing about his lower extremity, whether it's a compensation mechanism, whether it's just a susceptibility to the higher physical play and demands, that's happened. I would definitely consider that like more of an injury prone player. Another one that kind of comes to mind is TJ Watt. People probably don't know this, but he's not really known as like super, super injury prone, but he's had four right groin injuries, just his right groin, four. That's just odd. Right. Since 2017, you see somebody with four of those. There's got to be something, right? There's got to be either like tight hip flexors or a compensation mechanism that's going on that's causing this recurrence. So I do believe people are susceptible and they are more injury prone. It might not just be the fact that it is like as simple as your genetic makeup versus mine.
Well, it's like as soon as you introduce football to the equation, now you're basically, so if, you know, two completely healthy, uninjured guys that have never had an injury before, there's probably no more likelihood that one is going to get injured than the other. But as soon as you start to introduce football, which is effectively a guaranteed injury somewhere,
right?
Like we hear all the time about, you get to December, nobody's healthy.
Right.
All of these guys are playing through something.
Right.
It's just a case of how bad it is and whether it's going to keep you off the field or not. So when you introduce football and you say, now you guys are all professional football players, you're guaranteeing that they're getting injured somewhere. Now it changes your starting point. Like,
right.
you're not saying everybody's healthy, it's all bets are off. Now we're saying, okay, with something wrong with you, how well do you compensate? How well do you get through that? Are you susceptible now to other things relative to the next guy? And that's where the difference is.
Absolutely.
In.
I mean, and it's just the variable, right? The variable of playing the sport, an aggressive sport, and the variable of, do I need to come back sooner to help my team? You know, kind of something that we were talking about earlier is like, am I that important for this playoff run to come back sooner? Well, yeah, you might become more injury prone
right.
than just for the fact that you're coming back a week early.
I mean, it's also, there's such a huge, this is one of those things where luck is massive, right?
Yeah,
like the
absolutely.
What you get in terms of an injury is huge. Like I always said, I feel like I got lucky for playing several years of football and never suffering a major knee injury.
Mm-hmm.
And I always said that like if I got one, you know, torn ACL or whatever, that was it.
Yeah.
Done. Like I'm playing at an amateur level. I'm not getting money to go out and tear my ACL. So the second
right.
I like properly tore up a knee, I was going to be out. Managed to get out before that, but I knew a guy who wrecked his knee doing that, and he spent years coming back from that. Like
absolutely,
it's brutal.
Yeah.
The other thing I wanted to ask is, at this point in time, year 2023, have we kind of passed the stage where career-ending injuries are a thing? You know, obviously beyond paralysis
right.
or something like that. But there was a time where if you tore your ACL, you were done, right?
Yeah.
That was your football career over. Or then it became, you know, microfracture was a terrifying word to hear. If you
yeah.
heard that,
right.
guy's career was over. You tore an Achilles, that guy was done. You know, all those kinds of things. Now it feels like, I mean, players are coming back from an Achilles within a year and
mm-hmm.
playing and getting on the field. ACL feels almost routine. It's like, oh, it's just an ACL. You know,
right.
now it's only if you hear three or four ligaments torn at the same time that we've got concerns. Like,
yes.
have we actually reached the point of medical development where there really isn't a career-ending injury anymore. It's just a case of how long it's going to take for you to come back.
Yeah, you know, I have to agree with that. I think it's just the medical advancement. I mean, not only surgically, but on the rehabilitative side of things, it's just advanced a ton. You know, there are certain injuries that are harder to predict on a return. I mean, I don't think ACL is to the point of like routine ACL, but it's advanced. Achilles is so widespread. Sometimes there's nerve damage, sometimes there's not. So a lot of times what you end up seeing is it's case by case, but I don't sit there and look at any specific injury being like, this is a, you know, it's a career ender, don't get it. I do think also though, with the advancement in concussions, we are going to see more players bow out, and say, you know, I'm calling it. And that's also just done with research and medical advancement, like I was saying with the other injuries.
So. Yeah, I mean, yeah, concussions, I sort of feel, are almost their own little world. We're definitely going to see players' careers ended by concussions, mm-hmm. you know, whether it's somebody like Tua, but, you know, that kind of thing where a guy gets sidelined for an extended period of time, gets shut down, you know, maybe... I mean, it's happened in other sports already. It's going to happen in football, right. Whether or not it's happened in football to this point already. And like Chris Borland, right? Didn't he walk away mm-hmm. essentially through fear of that kind of thing? Just being like, it's not worth it. I'm right. not taking the risk. Now, that's slightly different to a guy who has suffered to the degree where they're thinking that way. But Borland got out ahead of it. Whether or not you want to count him as the first, there's definitely going to be more of those guys.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I remember when Keekly walked away.
Right.
So, and he sit there.
He dealt with a lot. I mean, he wore that collar thing that was supposed to work towards concussions. So
yeah.
He's, I guess, probably in that category.
Yeah. And so, I mean, that's definitely an area. I think, though, with as far as other approaches to injuries, you know, like I talked about the Achilles, the ACL, It is hit or miss. There are higher risks, though, for season enders, for sure. And, you know, you talked about it. I mean, knees. They rely on knees. These players rely on their knees so much. If that becomes damaged enough, it can be career enders. It's just to what extreme.
Do you have a take on the surface, playing surface debate that was going on sort of just at the start of this offseason? The players seem to want, you know, all grass surfaces, every stadium. There was a body of research a while ago that basically said there was no difference between between artificial turf and grass. The only difference was what you injured.
Yeah.
The rate didn't change, but what you were injuring on each given surface changed a little bit. But then apparently there was more research that said, okay, on a specific type of turf, this split, split something, some specific type of artificial turf, was causing more of these knee injuries where you would, you know, the classic, like your cleat gets caught in the ground, the knee twists, right. Your foot doesn't, and something tears, that actually was creating more injuries. Do you have any particular insight on that?
Yeah.
Slit film. There you go. Tyler's hitting it in the chat box.
Yeah. So, Sam, it's kind of funny. I am not a conspiracy theorist, okay, at all. But the one study that really referred to no difference in this was done 1 year. Okay, 1 year by the NFL. They conducted a study and it was an outlier season where they looked at injuries that were done on turf versus done on grass playing fields. So the NFL player union, they were livid because they're like, you're taking data from the 1 year that was an outlier year and you're coming out and broadcasting it as like there's no difference.
Right.
Well, there definitely is a difference. Look at it as just the fact that like underneath grass is soil. It has slide, it has give, right? It's not only softer, but it shifts with you, okay? There's a certain amount where the grass is rooted where it can kind of move with a planted cleat. Turf doesn't give you that as much, not nearly as much. And the surface underneath turf is firmer. Now, of course, that's advanced a lot, right? I mean, there is more bounce to it. There is, they're trying to make textures way, way more like grass. But there's a big difference. So the players really like it because I think they truly believe that they feel like they can cut better and they're not getting stuck and planted. And they also, I mean, they are less likely to get injured when it is something that's not just planting their cleat in and hopefully your ankle doesn't roll.
Right? I also feel like that debate, like so we, you know, when it becomes injuries, it's like, oh, obviously everyone wants to play on grass. And when you get to December and a grass turf field looks like a grass turf field, it's like, this is disgraceful. How can we even let them play football in this? Like, what are we doing here? Right. Like, this is not, like, it feels like it's lose-lose. Whatever you do, we're going to be whinging about the surface. That's just the nature of the world. But definitely when the weather's nice, grass feels better to play on. Obviously, it's just better to run around on. I think anybody that's played on the two knows that. And that's even before you get to, like, I'm sure NFL turfs or NFL fields are about as good as they get, but you know, you go, they still haven't fixed the idea of like getting torn up by the surface. Like you hit the ground on those things, you're getting ripped to pieces. That's why you see players still wearing that, you know, duct tape all over them. Because if you hit the ground with bare skin on turf, it's still going to tear your skin to pieces in a way grass doesn't.
I kind of want the Raiders to go back and at least put like a makeshift baseball field in their stadium, just to have that aspect. And wasn't it the Ravens the other year that they were complaining so much that their practice field was so bad, like that they just didn't want to play on it because of the risk of injury? So yeah, I mean, there is wear and tear that go into grass, but just like we talked about with like how turf has advanced so much, lawn care and just the care of that. I mean, they can roll out sheets of new grass. I mean, an entire field worth. So
there's a lot of those stadiums now, multiple stadiums where you can roll the entire surface out.
Like the Cardinals stadium, where
you just wheel it out, put it in the sun, put something else in there, and then wheel it back in for the game. Okay, so back to the kind of general injuries. How many injuries that we see would you consider? So sort of let's say season-ending injuries or, you know, significant portion of the season-ending injuries that you would have basically no concern about the following season.
The following season?
Yeah.
Yeah, so...
Because that's what we're looking at now, right? Is everybody from whether it's a fantasy perspective or just looking at their team, you know, these are my guys that were injured last season. They're coming back this year. Do I expect them to be 100%? Am I getting the same guy back? Am I getting a guy who it's going to linger this year? Or am I getting a guy who's still going to be some, you know, extended period of time away? Or it comes with it a significant worry about what he's going to be this year?
Yeah, I mean, that's a good question. So I would most likely separate it into two things. You got soft tissue injuries and you have like joint ligament tendon injuries. Soft tissue injuries, there is a high recurrence within season, but if somebody is straining their hamstring and then they can take 5 months, you know, from their last injury to rehabbing over the summer, they should be good.
So that's a great example of that one is Jackson Smith and Jigba, who had a hamstring injury that basically lingered for the entire football season.
Right.
And that was a big red flag to a lot of people at draft time because you're like, guys that get hamstring injuries, you know, they come back, they recur, they linger. Look at that. He was out the whole year. But theoretically, once he got shut down and was able to draft prep, you know, take the whole time off, he should be 100% now. It's not a thing we should be thinking
about. I mean, I definitely think that's if – they actually found some of the true cause. I mean, is his hamstring injury recurring because of some other mechanism that's going on in his body, right? Like, is he not strong enough or stable enough, like around his knee or his quadriceps, or is he driving so much from his hamstring that his glute's not getting involved? Those simple things like that, they figure out, especially with that much time going from the collegiate to professional level, especially like he's had another set of eyes on it. I mean, there are players that you see that get those soft tissue injuries, it seems like every single year.
Yeah.
You know, I look
particularly
back,
hamstrings. Like there do seem to be people that are very susceptible to hamstring injuries. But it always felt to me that there's a big difference between a guy who will consistently pull a hamstring and somebody whose hamstring went once and they never got it back to 100%. Because I did that. Like, I pulled a hamstring pretty badly one time, and because I was like a part-time rugby coach where you have to referee kids games and stuff. I couldn't get it 100% because I would have to like run and I kept going again. Like, and it's been, I don't know how long I had that hamstring injury, a long time for like a ridiculously relatively routine pull that should have been healed pretty quickly. And I just kept aggravating it week on week on week. And my mind is always blown in the NFL season where their guy's been out with a hamstring injury for 3 weeks or whatever. And they're like, he's back in this game. They say he's 85%. I'm like, how? I don't understand. How can you be 85% with a hamstring? Because that means you can't sprint at all. And if you're a wide receiver, like, that feels pretty important. Like, you literally cannot sprint in this game. how are you on the field?
Right. I tend to laugh at when they get percentages of like 80. Why wasn't it 86%?
Right.
You know, but the one thing I think is fascinating. So with hamstrings specifically, there is a 28% chance of recurrence within 2 years. Okay. So you tear your hamstring.
Even when it's back like 100% theoretically. Yep.
So within 2 years. So Let's say you did it week one last year. Okay. You still have a 28% chance that this year that it's going to happen. But I mean, that's not relatively high. I mean, considering the sport itself of injuries that could happen are all relatively high.
Is that significantly higher than any other random injury?
Yes. I mean, it is high. Yeah, I mean, it'd be higher than like, let's say an AC joint separation or something. So you have that. But the fascinating thing about that is 71% of the time that injury in your hamstring reoccurred in the same season. And if it did happen in the same season, 23%, almost a quarter of the time, was that first week back.
Right.
So people,
that makes sense.
People are coming back, like you said, at that 85% level, and they're way higher that first week to get another injury like that. And it just shows, I mean, productivity that first week back from a hamstring strain is way less. I mean, it drops off. So my whole thought process is like, why wouldn't you just hold them out another week? Not only are you putting them at that 23% risk level, but then you're
sitting hamstring always felt to me a very unusual injury, because you only know if it's fixed when you give it that 100%.
Exactly.
Every other injury, every other muscle, at least soft tissue injury, you could kind of feel it out beforehand, and you could figure out whether it was good or not before you gave it 100%. Whereas with a hamstring, you're only going to know if it's back and held together when you finally give it that 100% sprint and it stays intact.
Right.
And you can think it's back, and then you give it that 100% sprint and it goes again. You're like, oh, okay, it wasn't.
Right.
Like,
you run still a nine route and you're like, oh, never mind.
Yeah. It turns out it's not fixed. and it's another 6 weeks. Great. This is fantastic.
Right.
Yeah. So hamstrings always felt to me a very, like, an unusual, a unique injury in that way, in that it's really hard to figure out if you're actually 100% back. Now, I will say, I'm sure it's different coming from your world, where people can like scan it and look at it and dive into it and actually get an idea, versus my world of, that feels all right.
Yeah.
You know, let's strap it up and see.
Yeah, do a couple
and then
of jumps.
Twang.
And then,
no, it wasn't. Okay.
Yeah, I mean, there is a difference, and especially like with imaging or the location of a hamstring strain, like, you know, the muscular tendinous junction, kind of where it inserts at, like underneath your glutes and butt. If you get an injury there and a strain there, it's a longer recovery than if it's actually in the muscle belly. So it just kind of depends with that. But it kind of goes back to what you were talking about. Like, I mean, soft tissue injuries in general, if they're rehabbed the right way, and you also figure out the mechanisms around that might have been causing an issue, you shouldn't see a huge recurrence if they have the proper time off, unlike something that needs like major surgical repair.
So let's get into some specific players. One of the players I think that was getting consistently brought up a lot was, actually, no, let's do it this way. So a lot of running backs were in this request list, various different injuries, and I think a complete scale. And this gives me a chance to circle back to something we were talking about on Monday. Obviously, running backs and contracts and value blew up on Monday. Big discussion, even after we had the podcast. One of the things on the podcast we were talking about was holdouts, you know, for these guys on the franchise tag. And I was talking about how the fines are so onerous, you can't really do that anymore. A lot of people pointed out that until they sign the tag, they can't be fined. So that's a very legitimate point for these guys, that they can hold out and not be fined those onerous amounts because they haven't yet signed that tag. Of course, the flip side of that is they can't earn any money while doing that.
Right.
So just wanted to point out that everyone that called me out on that, you're right. I was wrong. All right. So Tony Pollard, one of those guys on the franchise tag, broke his leg last year. And that to me falls into the category, and tell me if I'm wrong, of one of the least concerning injuries you can have. Just a clean bone break. It heals. You're 100%. You're good to go. We don't need to think about that going forward. That's at the sort of low end of the concern spectrum heading into this year.
Yeah, I mean, for the most part, right? Like, I mean, he wasn't dealing with like a Alex Smith compound or anything, but and the blessing in a bad situation of that is he was just like broke a non-weight bearing bone in his leg. The fibula actually doesn't bear a lot of weight compared to the tibia, right?
Okay.
So his weight bearing status actually gets expedited because he just he's not having to put too much pressure on it. He also had a little bit of a high ankle sprain with that, but they did surgery, and what they do is like a tightrope surgery. Same thing that happened with Cooper Kupp. It's this really cool surgery where they basically do a syndesmosis plate, and what that does is it just basically anchors in their ankle to make it way more secure. So they just go right in through the outside where he broke his fib, and they just anchor it and make it almost stronger. So I don't see any issues with Tony Pollard coming back. He actually was running, correct me if I'm wrong, with the ones during OTAs, like out there on the field running plays.
Right.
So, his healing has been great anyway. And I also think he's partially kind of a freak athlete. You know, sure. Like I think Tony Pollard is kind of special in that regard. So,
and is the only, so, you know, generally we're saying bone breaks should be on the low end of the concern spectrum going forward. The differences of that are when there are significant complications, right?
Yes.
Alex Smith's leg injury, where obviously that turned into a whole different deal with flesh-eating bacteria and all that kind of thing.
Right.
What would be the extra complications where you would start to be concerned? So Lewisine's injury,
right?
Against the Saints, where he bad leg break, compound leg break, which I think means the bone comes out through the skin, essentially, right?
And his was actually a little bit lower towards his ankle articulation, and he broke both the fib and the tib.
Right.
So on top of that, not to mention, like, you're dealing with ankle sprains, right? If you break both of those and your ankle goes crooked, you're only hanging on by those ligaments, right? So he's dealing with that on top of it.
So that's where, so for a guy like Sean, clearly it's more concerning than Tony Pollard. Mm-hmm. What is the, which is the sort of elements of that extra complicated injury that is the added concern? So the compound part of it, is that only, it's basically just the risk of infection?
Well, that and for him, it limited his weight-bearing status a lot more.
Okay.
So, you know, because he broke both of those in his lower extremity, he not only had to have surgery, but he's dealing with putting pressure back on a bone that was fractured, okay, that he's having to now run with and have agility with and do all that. So when Lewisine had that break, and you see, you know, it's kind of gruesome, but that those ankle flops and stuff like that, you know that that's going to be a long process just for the fact that when it's restructured, he's got to be able to put pressure on it and through it. Now, that's the complication. I mean, I'm not really worried about infection as much. I mean, Alex Smith was a very rare statistic in that regard. Like, yeah, they need to make sure they cover it up right away. But, I mean, I wouldn't be worried in that regard as
much. But that is the only sort of real concern, if you like, about the compound part of it, right?
Mm-hmm.
Like, we hear the difference between compound break and just regular internal leg break. The only real concern about the compound part is that exposes it to potential infection, but once you're past that, we don't need, that's no longer a like an additional concern relative to just a normal bone break.
Yeah, and sometimes with compounds, you don't just get a clean break. There can be fragments.
Okay.
And when you get fragmentation, that can get a little messy because now are they pinning bones back in? Are they going to do that stuff? I mean, added screws, added complications, that type of thing.
So for Pollard, would we be more concerned if he had broken the other bone in mm-hmm. his leg, the load-bearing one, because that changes things, right?
That changes his rehab limitations, yeah.
So we're more, Lewisine, more concerned, broke both bones,
mm-hmm.
Clearly stressed ligaments because of having broken both bones. The compound part is kind of irrelevant unless it indicates like a kind of fragmentation of those bones.
Right.
How do you think, what do you think his recovery should look like this year?
Well, I was actually watching a little bit of video on Lewisine and he looks good. I mean, he actually looks really good. He looks pretty explosive. He actually quoted, like, I look more explosive than ever. The big thing is when he's playing in space. And I don't have a problem, like, I think him going downhill straight line, I don't think that. I think it's when he's playing in space to seeing how he can maneuver on that leg, changing, cutting. It's actually funny because, you know, he didn't have the best, but he had a 52 PFF coverage grade that year before he got hurt. If that goes down, I mean, he might be a little bit more of a liability if he's not planting and cutting on that leg that well. So the biggest thing that we need to watch is like his agility and space off of that, how he can plant, how he can jump, be explosive, that kind of thing.
I never broke any sort of significant bone.
Mm-hmm.
Is there, from a player's point of view, you hear a lot about, like, you know, they get back and then they take another year to sort of be confident on the injury, right?
Mm-hmm.
And I can absolutely relate to that when it comes to you know, sprained ligaments and muscle injuries, particularly the hamstring. Mm-hmm. But is that the same with broken bones, or does that mentally, is it much easier to feel comfortable on those once it's back and working?
I think once it's back and working, it is, but there's a period where your bone fusion and the calcification has occurred where it's fine, you can do anything on it, but it still can be sore.
Right.
And that's kind of that mental aspect. It's like, I know I'm good, but I still have some soreness, right? And it gives you that hesitation. And that's what's also kind of scary, is then how are you compensating, right? Like, if I'm not able to pound that leg into the ground and drive off of it, what am I doing to change it, to try to get to, you know, from point A to point B as fast?
Yeah.
So there is some of that.
So OBJ is another mm-hmm. one that came up a lot. Okay. Obviously a guy that's had multiple knee injuries now, but theoretically is supposed to be back, is supposed to be Baltimore's number one wide receiver. They're paying him a pretty healthy amount of money with this kind of risk, I guess, associated with bringing him in. What should we be expecting from OBJ this year?
So because of the ACL, he had an ACL revision. I look at it as, it's kind of standard to know, like, your first year back from ACL is probably a dip in productivity. Your second year back, you're more likely just to be good to go. So this would be his second year back, right? But he also had a revision. And so the best way I would kind of describe this is, like, they don't need to dig a new tunnel for OBJ for his surgery. The tunnel's already there. So they're just kind of cleaning up whatever inside to do this revision. And his knee is now used to those mechanics already. I don't see a problem with OBJ actually coming back this year and being very productive, as long as he's done everything he needs to. It was kind of funny, after his first ACL, there was a big video, I don't know if you remember, of him running on a treadmill, like full sprint, right? Mm. The interesting thing is, you never saw him accelerate and decelerate. And one of the first, or the hardest things to come back after an ACL, is that acceleration to get to back where you were pre-ACL, is that, you know, first 5-10 yard sprint of acceleration. So I kind of laugh when I see these players that, you know, get an ACL and you see them sprinting on a treadmill, or you catch them running by the camera at the 50 yard line, but you didn't see their takeoff and you didn't see their deceleration.
Right.
But I do think that he's good. I think he's far enough out. He's taken that year. He's had a good surgery. From everything that I've read, it was a very straightforward revision. So,
and he's another guy where now you're seeing the full videos. Like, now you're seeing him run routes. You're seeing everything. You're seeing the cutting. You're seeing the get off. You're seeing the slowdown, the breaks, the turns. The whole thing is out there now, and it looks pretty slick so far.
Oh, he looks good, and all the unnecessary one-handed catches too that you see.
I can't think of anybody that makes catching the ball look as easy as he does.
It's ridiculous.
Like, even Chris Carter had maybe the best hands the game's ever seen, right? That's like his thing. A Hall of Fame receiver whose calling card is like having the best hands, making those spectacular one-handed catches. And there's a video out there somewhere of Carter like explaining to a reporter how he catches one-handed, like literally walking him through. There's a jugs machine over here, ball's getting fired at him here, and he's walking him through the mechanics of like how to catch one-handed. But even that looks harder than OBJ does it,
yeah, right?
Who just snatches it with like no thought, not even cleanly, just like plucks it with fingertips in a way that I think can only function if you have those SeaTac gloves or whatever. But like, even the difference between maybe the best hands to ever do it and OBJ is big. Difference between those two guys is significant. Like, OBJ makes it look easier than Carter did when he was walking you through how to do it whilst talking to a guy. It's crazy.
I know. His ability to make that look so simple is kind of sickening. My wife threw me a passy the other day. She tosses me pacifier, and I miss it by like a foot with my hand. And I was just like, I'm such a disgraceful athlete. Yeah. And you look at like OBJ, he'd like close his eyes and catch a fade in the back corner like it was nothing, you know?
Oh, we just posted our rugby video, so I don't need any more reminders of what a disgusting level of athlete I am right now. But it's amazing to me like how not cleanly he's able to do that. Like, you know, like Larry Fitzgerald, again, some of the best hands ever. When you look at his hand size, they're huge, mm-hmm. right? It's like he should never drop the ball, because like the margin for error that his hand size gives you is insane.
Right.
But when you watch him catch, it's almost always cleanly, like perfect technique. It's in the hand, it's in the palm, it's like full surface area working here. Right. OBJ is the only guy that consistently can catch like with his fingers.
Right.
Like the ball doesn't touch his palm.
Yeah.
It's like snagged out of the air with just three or four points of contact with that sticky glove and just sticks and doesn't come out. Like, how the hell does he do that?
Yeah, we're going to find out something like down the road, like his finger workouts of just yeah. like, to the extreme.
And like his hands are big, but yeah. they're not. You know, like Larry Fitzgerald's, I'm pretty sure, are significantly bigger right. than OBJ's. And right. there are other people out there with much bigger hands than that that cannot do that.
Right.
I don't
right.
know how he's able to make that happen.
Yeah, it's funny.
All right, let's jump back. Another ACL. Back to the running backs. Breece Hall is another yeah. one that a lot of people wanted to hear about. Potential rookie of the year type of season. Mm-hmm. Dan tears his ACL. What should we be thinking about year one?
Yeah, I mean, in general, when as clean as it can get, he had a pretty clean ACL tear. Pretty straightforward, good surgery. I see him potentially being back week one. He fits the mold of a lot of criteria for ACLs that will put him at a better recovery. So studies have gone out and they basically said like a good recovery predictor for ACL, you need to fall in these categories. You need to be under 25. You need to have a non-complex injury, so like, you know, not a J.K. Dobbins, something like that. Right. You need to have those 9 months of recovery. You need to be about a third round grade pedigree or higher. And I think that might just kind of dive into more of like the athletic profile yeah. of things. And then from there, your success rate goes up exponentially. So I don't see him having an issue coming back. It was a pretty straightforward surgery, pretty straightforward injury. And then, you know, he's had time to recover and do the rehab. He might miss a couple weeks. I don't even know if I see him going on the PUP. I think that he'll probably just, you know, ease back into that first week or second week and then go from there. So.
And then do we expect the same kind of guy year one, or should we expect this dip in production in 2023 and then we get the real Breece Hall back in 2024?
So, like, my viewpoint on injuries is if somebody has a significant injury, it's really hard to expect them to come back better, right? You know, sure. It might be what they produced last year, which was for him a great running back, but it's really hard for me to sit there and say, well, this person's going to come back and outperform what they did before they had the significant injury, before they had an off season where all they could focus on was just rehab and recovery. So it's normally either a dip, especially that first year back, and then they can kind of get back to where they were the second year, or they hit that baseline of just what they were producing before the injury. You know, I mean, look at Adrian Peterson, for example. Everybody was like, wow, he made a tremendous recovery, came back, you know, MVP the following year after his ACL. But Adrian Peterson came back to Adrian Peterson. Like, he was already a good running back before that. He was already the best in the league. So I'd expect a Breece Hall, when he gets to that point, he'll be about what you had. Now, whether that's this year or kind of overflows to next year, that's a big question.
This season, DraftKings has launched the largest best ball tournament in DraftKings history. Right now, you can enter into DraftKings best ball tournament for a shot at over $10 million in guaranteed cash prizes. Make your entry into the draft today, sit back, relax, and enjoy the NFL season without having to worry about managing your roster, waiver wires, and more. To start playing best ball, download the DraftKings app using code PFF. Enter DraftKings Best Ball Millionaire Contest and snake draft your team for the season. Each week, you'll automatically rack up points from all your top scorers. No ads, drops, trades, or I shouldn't have played him instead. Teams with the most points by the end of the season will have a shot to take home the $1 million top prize. So what are you waiting for? Head to the DraftKings app and sign up with the code PFF and start playing best ball today. Join the DraftKings $10 million best ball tournament only on DraftKings with code PFF. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. One per customer. Opt-in required with $10 entry fee. Bonus issued is 10 DraftKings dollars. Age and eligibility restrictions apply. Void where prohibited. See DraftKings.com/promotions for details. Ends August the 9th, 2023.
Why take one vacation with the family when you could take all of them? With Royal Caribbean, you don't just go to the beach. You visit a private island and race down the tallest water slide in North America. You don't just go for a road trip. You ATV and zip line through the jungle. You don't just go somewhere new. You rappel down waterfalls and discover ancient temples. Because this isn't just any vacation. This is all the vacations. Come seek the Royal Caribbean. Ships Registry, Bahamas.
At Evernorth Health Services, we believe costs shouldn't get in the way of life-changing care, and we're doing everything in our power to make it possible. Behavioral health solutions that also keep your projections at their best? It's possible. Pharmacy benefits that benefit your bottom line? It's possible. Complex specialty care that cares about your ROI? It's possible. Because we're already doing it. All while saving businesses billions. That's Wonder made possible. Learn more at evernorth.com/wonder.
How much does a guy like Adrian Peterson just ruin expectations for everybody by just being a pure freak show from start to finish?
Yeah, that bell curve shifts a little bit, you could say that, with those kind of outliers.
I guess one that Von Miller's another ACL guy that I think a lot of people wanted to hear about. And Von Miller is somebody that obviously doesn't tick some of those boxes because he's not 25. Right. He's the wrong side of 30. And how much does that influence things?
So, I mean, Von Miller, again, was just a more of a standard ACL, which is always a nice predictor that it's not complex, but he is on the older side. I expect Von Miller to be halfway through the season coming back. He's going to maybe, I mean, come back earlier, but he also is a veteran. He knows his body. He knows his limitations. And I don't see the surgery itself and the injury itself being any different than like just, you know, a routine ACL recovery, other than the fact that he is a little bit older. I don't know exact age, but in his case, he's going to be probably mid-season coming back to full form. And he even said that. He actually made a comment that he hopes to come back, you know, early to mid-season. So
yeah, he's 34. In his case, it's really just at that kind of age, your body heals slower. It's not that it's going to – it's not that it's any worse, any riskier. It's just 34, you heal slower than you do at 24. Mm-hmm. It's going to take him longer.
Yeah.
That's basically what we're talking about.
You also are at more risk with like an ACL to have other injuries. And we kind of talked about that. We call it regional interdependence, where like, you know, you have an injury like that, then what shifts in your ankle, what shifts in your hip, like what changes are you making? But the other thing is like, you know, with him, they're probably going to be more careful because they want that later in the half of the season. And when you come back from an ACL, you have like a 70% higher risk of hurting your hamstring. So they also want, hey, I want you to come back, and if we have to delay you another week or two, let's do it to know that you're 100%. I mean, you probably remember Chris Godwin last year, comes off the ACL, everybody's like, whoa, he's back pretty early, and boom, hamstring strain, week one. You know, that's because there's that correlation. He had a higher risk of doing that, and he just came back a little early.
Yeah, there's very little incentive for the Bills to, you know, rush him back. They need Von Miller for the playoffs.
Correct.
And frankly, if they don't even see him before the playoffs, okay,
right,
it's fine. Like, we need him for the postseason. If he gets a tune-up game late in the year, that's fine. Like, that's all we need. What we can't have happen was what happened last season, where he goes down, you don't have him for the playoffs, and now, you know, you materially change that defense against the best teams in the NFL.
Right.
They need the opposite of that. If they don't see him for the regular season, it's not a problem. But they need him for that postseason run, where you run into the likes of Cincinnati, Kansas City, et cetera, et cetera. So,
right, absolutely.
Yeah, there's no incentive for them to rush him back whatsoever.
Mm-hmm.
So another guy that came up a lot was Tyree Wilson.
Mm-hmm.
Big edge rusher, rookie. Raiders drafted him, and his pre-draft process was interesting because we were hearing everything from he could go number 3 overall to – all of a sudden, late in particular, it started to go, his foot injury is worse than people said it was, and he's going to tumble. And,
right.
You know, that how, what do we know about him? What do we think about him?
Well, so when you have a foot injury, it's really interesting because they can kind of go hush-hush. And, you know, with somebody like Tyree Wilson, when you have a season-ending foot injury, and he had surgery, I think it was in November, if I'm correct. When you have something like that, you not only need to get back from the surgery healing perspective, but you need to get back to the mechanics of planting off of it, doing all that kind of stuff. And when it comes to something like a Lisfranc injury, so Lisfranc is the fracture like on the inside part of your foot, that's a hard recovery, and especially with surgery. And so Tyree Wilson is somebody who I think benefited a lot from going to the care of the NFL. I think that they looked at his athletic profile more than anything and said, this guy's going to be able to produce.
Right.
But I don't see them rushing him in, because this is also somebody where you very well know, I mean, he was pretty raw. Like, he had a really good season, right? And had a highlight season this last year. But he's raw. And I don't see them trying to force him back in and pushing him through an injury that has such a high recurrence rate. So I could see them slow playing him. I mean, even getting him in the rotation and just saying, like, hey, we're going to monitor you, but if there's any complications, anything come up, we're just not doing it.
Are there injuries that are very NFL specific? Like, mm-hmm. there are certain injuries that you hear basically only when it comes to the NFL. Other sports don't seem to have these injuries. Liz Frank tends to be one. Like, I can only think of really NFL players, quite a lot of them, that have had a Liz Frank injury, and that rarely seems to surface in a lot of other sports. Now, maybe, yeah. I mean, look, I have no idea what happens in baseball. For all I know, every second pitcher gets a Liz Frank injury. And then, what was the other one? Like, a lot of foot injuries, it seems.
Turf toe.
Yeah, turf toe, yeah. And plantar fasciitis, yeah. again, is another thing. I've never heard of a rugby player getting that, yeah. ever. And in theory, you know, there's a lot of crossover between rugby and the NFL. Like, why are some of these injuries seem to be very hyper-specific to football?
Well, I think a lot of it has to do, like, with also the mechanism of how that injury occurs. So a good example is, like, the most common Liz Frank injury for linemen is when they're up on their toes, right, and their heel is up, and then somebody rolls on top of their heel, and it kind of almost pushes down, okay. and causes that fracture. I mean, that's a very specific, I mean, you see right. linemen up on their toes every single play, right? A pile up that could happen just like that. So that's kind of how you see some of these occur. It's just because of the nature of either their position or how it's played. Running backs, you know, with Liz Frank injuries, you see them all the time. Not only are they pounding on the inside of their foot when they're breaking and pushing off, especially with that big toe, but they get rolled up on and they get hit from behind, right? And that's so easy for that to happen. Whereas, like, you know, you're not seeing these in soccer or baseball or anything like that, or rugby. You know, you have a little bit different positions, and you have a little bit different, you know, roles for each guy that's doing that. So
a couple of other players that I wanted to talk about specifically before we can kind of open this up again, back to the running backs, and we've been working through this kind of spectrum of concern. Tony Pollard, not really concerned at all. Breece Hall, relatively routine, mm-hmm. should be back. Then we have Javonte Williams, mm-hmm. and he's at the other end of the spectrum where he seemed to tear basically everything. Didn't just tear an ACL. When first of all, when you talk about, you know, I forget the word you were using, a sort of simple ACL injury, when you talk about additional things, are we talking about the severity of the ACL tear itself, or did you tear an ACL and a PCL, or an ACL and an MCL, like the extra damage that's done?
Yeah, normally you'll refer to like a complex with multiple ligamentous injuries. So, right. You know, Javonte had PCL, LCL, ACL, and that's pretty complex. I mean, look at what happened with J.K. Dobbins. With his injury specifically, it's a fine line between working back on the rehab and preserving motion versus doing too much. So, you know, especially with a PCL, there's a lot of attachment points that come to the back of your knee where his range of motion needs to stay pretty high, but at the same time, he's susceptible to overdoing it and straining that area. I kind of look at with even JK, you know, you watched him run a little bit and something wasn't right. And then yeah. he comes out and says, hey, I just don't have the range of motion. He gets a manip under anesthesia, knee gets better.
It looked like he was running with a limp.
It was. Weird. I mean, literally. Yeah, exactly. And so with this type of complex injury, not only is a rehab process a little bit more difficult, it's very specific because you have that fine line, but it's a longer rehab. You know, I think that Javonte is somebody who, though he's saying he's appearing at OTAs, doesn't mean that he's out there doing a bunch. I just don't see him having a really great recovery this season. And if he comes back, they're not just going to force him to a full workload. You know, it's one where he's going to probably get there mid-season, and we're going to get a really good grasp of how his recovery has been. He is at risk for, you know, more complications too. So, I mean, I hope and I cross fingers that he doesn't have a second surgery to go back in and fix anything up, because he is young and he does fit a lot of those other qualifications for a healthy recovery. But it's just so much more complex that he needs to really get back, not only with the healing of the surgery, but then all of the atrophy around those muscles and around his knee need to be full go, ready for him to take on the load of an NFL running back.
Do you expect Denver, a team that kind of quietly, I mean, not quietly, they haven't done anything with mm-hmm. this. Like, they've signed Samaje Perine, but he's very much a change of pace type of back, a third down kind of guy. Are Denver a team that you would expect to be like, actually, the closer we get to the season, we can't rely on Javonte Williams carrying the load, certainly not right out of the gate. Let's go and find a Dalvin Cook mm-hmm. or a, you know, Kareem Hunt has been out there for the entire offseason effectively. Like, a guy like that who you think can absolutely play at this level and be your number one running back, and then even if it's only for 1 year, then we can deal with Javonte next time.
Right, yeah. I mean, honestly, that would probably be, if I were to have like a bold prediction, that would be it. I think there's a lot of talk and chatter about Javonte right now and about how healthy he's gotten, and his recovery process has been really good, and that's great. But I'm not going to be surprised. I think that he's going to be put on the PUP. I think that he's probably at least out for 4 weeks. And I don't think Denver, like, I mean, like you said, I like P. Ryan, and I just don't know if he's going to be that type of player. I think they want him in that third down role. So I wouldn't be surprised if they went out there and got a Dalvin Cook. There's a lot of availability, even a Zeke, I don't know, right. But there's a lot of availability out there that can come plug and play, and then they don't have to work Javonte in so fast. Like, if they really believe in his talent for him to come back and be a workhorse next year, we'll get your workhorse this year in free agency, put him on the PUP, maybe delay his comeback, and then see how he feels.
So. Are those complex knee injuries the closest that today's NFL has to those career-ending injuries? You know, I tend to think of Marcus Lattimore mm-hmm. when, like, an amazing college running back. I think he did it in a bowl game, didn't he? Like, played the final game and tore his knee to pieces and got back, but was never the same guy again. Like, made it to the NFL, I think. Did he play, like, played in a little bit, whether it was preseason or a regular season game, but basically just got back, but was not Marcus Lattimore anymore, and eventually was done. Now, it's far enough ago that maybe things have developed even further. And sort of connected to that, is there a combination of ligament tears or damage in the knee that should be, you know, setting off alarm bells? Like, when we hear PCL, MCL, LCL, ACL, like all these ligaments, it's to anyone that doesn't know what the hell they're talking about, they're kind of interchangeable, right? In terms mm-hmm. of one is fine, more than one is a problem, but is there a specific combination of them that's a real problem relative to other combinations?
Well, yeah, a lot of times what you'll see is like the ACL, PCL, LCL, and that's because the LCL is on the outside of your knee. And so if there's, whether a plant cut or a direct blow, you know, you hit and you lose that pressure that keeps your knee upright from the outside, and that's very damaging. I mean, that's, yeah, and I mean, I would say that's about as close as you can get to like a career ender if it's somebody who's obviously late in age, or that, you know, might not be a full-time starter, but they have a long, long road ahead of them of recovery. I mean, I would say that's the case. The one caveat to that, though, is quarterbacks. Quarterbacks actually really don't take a big dip after like an ACL tear or a multi-ligament tear the following year. I mean, there might be a little bit of regression, especially like in those more mobile quarterbacks and their running ability. There is a little bit of a dip in that percentage of run attempts, but honestly, like with a complex knee like that, if you get that PCL, LCL, and ACL, it's a lot worse than just, you know, a clean, like, kind of like you said, yeah, one's bad, two's worse, 3 year kind of wins it
right
out.
So how much of a sample size are we dealing with when we're talking about those injuries for quarterbacks now? I'm just thinking with all the rule changes over the years and the Tom Brady rule in, you know, 2008 after his knee injury. How many quarterbacks are going down with that type of injury now?
I mean, it's more rare for sure. I mean, the latest that comes to my mind, you know, like Joe Burrow got his right left knee just completely demolished, and he was back the next year. Now, you did see a huge dip, not only in his passing attempts, but his rushing attempts the first part of that comeback of that year. I think that probably might have been a more conservative approach from the coaching end rather than him making the decision, I'm not going to, you know, run as much. But it's much less. I mean, with the protection of quarterbacks right now, like, you better hit them, you know, below the neck and above the waist. Right. And so that there has been a decrease in that injury for sure. But that's been tracked. I mean, it really heightened after Brady's injury. It really heightened as far as the tracking of that specifically, but it's much less.
How much does body size dictate some of this? Like, if you're a guy like J.K. Dobbins, is it easier to come back from a significant knee injury than it is for a guy like Javonte Williams, who's carrying a lot more weight and planting a lot more weight through those knees? And when we were talking about quarterbacks, you know, like obviously Teddy Bridgewater was able to come back from a horrific knee injury, mm-hmm. And has been effectively the same guy, can still run around, can still move, where somebody like Dante Culpepper had somebody launch himself through his knee, and at 250 pounds or whatever Culpepper was never the same guy again.
Right.
Like, yeah, that has to be, you would think, just from the forces of physics you're putting through those joints, has to play a part of it.
It does. It does play a part, but I think more importantly is the style of player they are. You know, like, you know, are you a downhill back, or are you relying a lot on cutting? You know, one person that I think of that came to mind is like when Cam Akers came back super early from his Achilles.
Yeah.
But if you watched him play, I mean, he was really straight line. He was not, I mean, he lost a lot of agility with that. And when you watch him come back week one, I was just like, man, yeah, he can hit that hole and he can run straight, but good luck trying to shake that safety coming up. So I think a lot of it also depends on like the type of player or what their demand is. I don't see like a big difference in Javonte and JK as far as like when they come back, if you can predict because of their body type that they're going to have a change. I think more of their playing style or what their demands are. You know, like you have a really mobile quarterback who's used to being on their feet and running and stuff like that. It's going to be a different recovery process anyway compared to like, you know, a sit drop back quarterback. So
a couple of guys that we've talked about on this show a lot as being basically guaranteed to pick up an injury in the course of an NFL season. Teron Armstead at left tackle for the Dolphins and Jimmy Garoppolo at quarterback. Yeah. Now, those two guys seem to be, you can basically budget in the fact that you're going to miss time from them in the course of the season.
Yeah.
Is that a case of what we talked about at the start of the show of now, once those guys have picked up injuries, once they're dealing with things, it's just in the knock-on effect that they will now pick up injuries because they are in a constant state of compensation for something.
Yeah, I mean, they really are. I mean, you look at, especially like Jimmy G, I mean, between his shoulder, his foot, his hand, he's had a lot. It's almost as if they're not spending enough time just going back to the fundamentals of football, and they're spending a little bit more time just kind of constantly rehabbing. So you're going to see that with certain players. The other thing is people don't understand, like, football is very hard as a sport to like complete a full season healthy. Like a good example is only 10% of wide receivers actually play a full season without getting injured. 10%. I mean, that's a low number. So when it comes to like missing a game or two, it happens. It happens all over the place. I mean, I would almost like when I look at like somebody like Dalvin Cook, you chalk him up for two games. I mean, you just do. And it's the way and the nature of how he plays and his past injuries and everything like that. So with some of these guys, yeah, you're going to almost expect it. You cross your fingers that it doesn't happen, especially for those higher profile players, kind of like we talked about, like with Mahomes, like, please don't go down, right? And if he does go down, let's get him as many anti-inflammatories in his ankle as we can and spat that up so he can come back and at least function on it. But then there's, you know, there's always just going to be that risk. It's the nature of the game.
Have you watched that quarterback show, the Netflix documentary?
Yeah.
How impressive was Mahomes playing through that high ankle sprain? Because typically when you hear high ankle sprain, it means the guy's out for a few weeks. Minimum. And then he basically just, as you say, just tapes it up, gets back out there, can't really move on it. And then you see this like couple of week sequence of him playing through this busted ankle and still being Mahomes.
Yeah, it's fascinating. I mean, outside of the medicinal purposes.
Which was the one thing you never saw. Like, that was conspicuous in its absence from the quarterback show. It's like, oh, we go in here, we get our, you know, x-ray, we make sure nothing's broken, and then we go in at halftime, we get some mobility on it or whatever. It's like, yeah, did you get anything else on it? Right. Like,
like,
was anything else involved there, let's say?
We're going to close the curtain now for a little bit. Yeah, so, I mean, outside of that, I was fascinated. I mean, it just shows that how good of an athlete he is. The one thing with like high ankle sprains and quarterbacks that you have to think about is if you're like a straight drop back passer, like, you know, give me like a Kirk Cousins, he's actually really not going to have a good recovery that just for the fact that like he plants off of that leg so much. He doesn't have the ability that Mahomes has to contort his body, to shift his weight, throw off his front foot. I mean, in that show, when they showed the replay of him scrambling off to the right and then doing a jump pass in the back of the end zone to Edwards-Helaire, I'm sitting there, I'm like, you can't replicate it. That's a different level. And so I think part of it is that he was able to just utilize his skills to not have to rely on that ankle for driving off and pushing off and staying as mobile as he could for that period. I mean, it was fascinating. It really was.
I would love to know how much painkillers he was given over the course of that period of time to be able to play on that. Because I do, like, there is a degree to which, obviously, this is limited to certain injuries, but if you could tape the thing solid and then get a painkiller, you know, you're kind of good to go.
Yeah, and like add the adrenaline of playing
the
game.
Like, I had a really bad ankle injury one time, and had a game that was coming up way sooner than whatever the timetable for recovery they gave me to come back was. But I had a friend who was a physio, and he came down for that one day and taped the thing solid as a rock, took a bunch of painkillers, and I'm like, I can't feel anything, and my ankle doesn't move. Like, I can use it like a spring. I can run off the tape. Right. And it doesn't matter that the ligament doesn't function anymore. It doesn't have to. Like, its job is being done by this tape. Right. So I'm good.
Yeah, his ankle was casted.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah, so yeah. Mahomes is dealing with that plus like significantly more powerful painkillers, I would imagine, than the, you know, paracetamol that I was eating at the time.
Right.
So
hence why we didn't see that part in those episodes.
There's a degree to which you can kind of understand that, you know, it's a pain thing. And if you take the pain away, we don't have a problem anymore.
Yeah, absolutely.
One more name that I think comes up a lot.
Yeah.
Michael Thomas. Michael Thomas, a guy that has seemingly been dealing with injury for a number of years now. And I had this conversation with somebody recently that you're sort of like, who do you expect to have a good season within that New Orleans receiving core? Is it Chris Olave taking a big step year two? Is it Rashid Shaheed? And you're sort of saying, well, if Michael Thomas comes back, and somebody was saying, well, yeah, but will he? Like, why should we at this point project anything from Michael Thomas given what his last couple of seasons has been? Right. Like, number one, what has been happening with that? Number two, can he finally shake that off?
Yeah, this is a good question. It's kind of crazy to think. It feels like it was sooner, but 2019 was his last big year. 2019. I mean, it's been a while. It's been a minute. And I look at Michael Thomas and his last injury. So he dislocated his second toe, which is a strange injury in itself because it's not the toe that you really drive off of. That's a big toe. But he did need surgery to repair the ligaments around it. So, you know, 50% of your push-off force when you're running comes from that big toe when you drive. And for him, not having to rely on that as much, you'd think is a good recovery. But given his past, and especially with his ankle and foot injuries, I don't trust it. I just don't. I mean, in 2021, he had what, the left ankle surgery? All right. And then he had a high ankle sprain in 2000. I mean, he's been recovering from foot injuries for a long, long time. And it's only getting further and further away from when he was at that elite level. It's kind of funny. In this case, I have questions if he's going to return to his form at all. I mean, sure, there might be a world where he comes back and he's a top three receiver in the NFL and everybody's like, it's Michael Thomas again, and there's a case that he's not even the top three on his team,
right?
You know,
but the funny thing is every time he's been back on the field, he's looked like Michael Thomas. It's just that it only lasts, you know, a couple of weeks, and then we break something again and we're back to square one. Like, he was last season, he played three games, and in those three games he scored three touchdowns, had 22 targets, 16 catches, 171 yards. Like, it was effectively Michael Thomas. And then we got injured, and now we're done for the season again. And 2020, you know, he had a Michael Thomas-like mini season, and just not enough. So, like, every time he does make it back to the field, he still looks like he could play at an elite level and be the best receiver, certainly on the Saints, and one of the best in the game. It's just that he doesn't seem to be able to stay on the field anymore.
Right. If you were sitting there saying, like, he's had 2 years, just the last two, bad luck, back-to-back injuries, maybe got forced back too soon, sure, I could see that bouncing back, but it's been a long time. And there was actually, it was really strange too. You remember how his last surgery was like delayed? Mm. So he was recovering and rehabbing. And every week you're like, I might come back. He might come back. And then all out of nowhere, he was having surgery.
Right.
That's also scary, because what was happening is that his body was not responding well to the rehab approach, and not responding well enough to where like there was clearly surgical indication at some point that he decided to opt out of because he wanted to come back, and all it did was it delayed his healing time. So that's a big concern too, is, I mean, he waited and waited and waited, and he spent that entire time just trying to rehab and it wasn't working. So I see injury recurrence, like we talked about, like injury prone. I see that being, you know, a little bit asterisk next to his name compared to other players.
Is that an issue generally where in the NFL there's obviously clear incentive to not get the surgery sometimes, right? Because you're done. Now, if you get the surgery, we now shut you down. You're not coming back for whatever that recovery period is, and it's probably the season in most cases.
Yep.
So there's clearly an incentive a lot of times to say, well, we could go for the surgery, but you're shut down tomorrow and you're not coming back till next year, or we try and do it this way. It's got a lower chance, but theoretically you could be back for the playoffs, you know, blah, blah, blah. I think intuitively in your brain, you sort of think, well, if you don't, if that doesn't work, you can always go do the surgery anyway. But is there actually a risk that going the rehab route and trying to do it that way and failing causes problems because you waited so long and didn't get the surgery day one?
Yeah, I mean, it's definitely indicative of their progress and their potential after, because if you're not going into surgery and you're trying to rehab and it's still not working, that's also a time period where your body's learning to compensate and probably do things a little bit the wrong way because it's so focused on the healing. And then there's certain surgeries where they say like, hey, if you do have it, your success after having surgery is better. I mean, sure, everybody would prefer not to. I mean, these are high level athletes and I don't want to have surgery. Like a shoulder dislocation is a great example. That's a long recovery if you have surgery after shoulder dislocations, but you don't have to necessarily all the time. But if you do, the recovery process once you get that done is much higher. It's just that you're now falling into that category of, I just had surgery, I'm out for this many months, I'm just calling it quits on that.
But do you generally change those dynamics by delaying in the first place? Like if you're given the choice, like, hey, right, shoulder dislocation, we can have the surgery, better chance of recovery, or we can try and, you know, stitch it together with rehab, et cetera. Do you actually change the chances of recovery or the dynamics of play there by saying, well, let's go this way, let's try the rehab stuff first, and then if we need to get the surgery down the road, we can do that?
Yeah, you definitely change the dynamics. And it's more because in almost every injury case, I mean, there's a couple outliers, you have a higher risk of hurting it again or hurting something else around it if you don't go that route. And it's more because they clearly aren't ready. Like, I mean, Michael Thomas is a great example. His body just didn't respond right.
Right.
And he had to get to that surgery. So in that window where he didn't do the surgery, he had more and more likelihood that he was doing something wrong with other muscles or that he was going to recur an injury if he tried to step out on the football field again. And, you know, it inevitably just delayed it by 6 months, and that's delayed healing, you know?
So one more name I want to bring up.
Yeah.
And look, shout if I'm ever going beyond your area of expertise, because this is getting some pretty specific stuff. But DeMar Hamlin obviously is one of the biggest stories to hit the NFL in years. Mm-hmm. We all saw what happened. It was one of the most just incredible, horrific, insane things that's ever happened to on a football field. He's now cleared, like 100% medically cleared to resume football, to come back, to play again. What should we be expecting? First of all, I think it's been when it happened, nobody really knew what happened to him, right? Like, what was this? Then it came out pretty quickly that it was this thing called, what was it, commotio cordis, where a sort of a badly timed hit effectively around the heart area stops the heart, shocks it into arrhythmia or whatever, and that was what did it. And then, you know, it became a giant conspiracy theory where people were pushing back, no, it was the vaccine, and blah, 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 right? I think now the established consensus is that it was this commotio cordis thing. That's what did it. And now he's been cleared. Is this something that's just literally freak occurrence, right? You get hit. And this is something I feel like as a kid, we all kind of knew this, that it was possible. It was one of those things that you would tell other kids. It's like a scare story, right? It's possible. If you get hit the wrong time in the wrong place, your heart stops.
and you just drop dead. Yep. And it was kind of like, okay, yeah, it's like being hit by lightning. It's something that can happen, but doesn't. Rare.
Yeah.
So I think we all kind of knew this anyway, and this was just evidence of that chance in effect, right? That one in a million or whatever it was, that was the one. We finally saw the one.
It was a one.
So is this just a case of that was the one in a million, it happened, they somehow, you know, saved him, brought him back to life, whatever you want to discuss now, and then now that it's done, that's your one in a million. Now it's like, what's the chance of that happening twice to him? You're literally back to the reset the number, it's one in a million chance that it happens again. Or because we saw it happen to him, I mean, is this something that could happen again?
Well, I mean, of course it is like one in a million, right?
Which
like
could it's be, a rare chance. One in a million can happen consecutively. It's just, it's very unlikely for that to happen.
Exactly. Yeah. You know, with DeMar's case, the best way you can put it, like in layman's terms, is his heart ticked when it should have talked. He got hit at the exact point when it just disrupted his heart rhythm. And then he got into a really, really bad situation of cardiac arrest. That can just happen. If it wasn't him, it was somebody else coming downhill that just got hit in an awkward time. There's not, I mean, the risk of that, and from what I've seen, is not go up because he's had it once.
Right.
It's just his biggest risk coming out is that he just spent that much time recovering. And his body went through something so traumatic that he has to recover and get back to his level of play. That, I think it could happen with anybody. It's interesting because I can't sit there and say, well, it's probably not going to happen for another 5 or 10 years. I mean, it could happen week one,
right?
But it's just such a rare occurrence. And I don't see DeMar being affected in any way from that. It's just that he needs to get back to his football condition, get back to his level of play. Because all the studies that came out after that, I mean, he didn't have any heart issues. He didn't have any underlying arrhythmias or anything like that. The complication literally just came from the impact. So,
because that's one element where it's not the same thing, but you know, the sort of sudden death syndrome or whatever, where we've seen the occasional high level athlete, Christian Eriksen was a player that it reminded a lot of people of the Christian Eriksen thing, where he just dropped in the middle of was it a Euros game or the World Cup game, Euros. And that was a similar thing, like scared the hell out of people. And eventually he had an underlying heart problem, which they were then able to correct once he has a pacemaker or whatever fitted now, because there was something wrong initially that had just never come up before.
Right.
Whereas that's a different thing to this, like this world where any one of us, if we're hit at exactly the wrong time, at exactly the wrong point, can have that happen to them. It just almost never happens.
Exactly. I mean, it's just so rare. I mean, you and I could be, you know, driving in the car, and if we get T-boned and get hit the right way, it is what it is. I think for him, I don't see any delay in his recovery as long as his rehab has been good so far with conditioning. That's the only concern, to be honest. And I think that he's going to be good to go. And, you know, you kind of cross your fingers that you don't see something like that happen again on the field.
And the fact that it's basically one of one at this point sort of indicates how unlikely it is to happen.
Right.
Like it could come along week one, but the chances are we'll never see that again because none of us have seen it in the first place. Like it took this long for this to ever happen on such a routine hit, on such a violent sport overall, that it is like that one in a million, you know, lightning strike or whatever. It's just just happened to him. Insane for us to all watch it on like the biggest stage.
Right.
Like not only did it happen once, but it happened in prime time in one of the biggest games of the year on the biggest stage. Like it couldn't have been more, like the only way it could have been a bigger deal is if it happened in the Super Bowl with everybody watching.
Yeah.
It's just such a absolutely crazy scenario.
Yeah, absolutely it was.
All right, so I'm gonna kinda open the floor to you if there's anything you specifically wanna touch on, and then we can wrap up with a couple of quick hitting things to end the show.
Yeah, I mean, the one thing that I think that I would like to touch on a little bit is you get into individual players and their injuries, but what's kind of interesting is also team specific. So like one of the things that you see is there is trends of teams that are more likely to be hurt than others.
The Chargers.
And the Chargers. The other thing that you see too is that there is a different in like even ACL tears for teams. So in the past decade alone, the Broncos have had 26 ACL tears. The Saints have had 6. I mean, that's a huge difference. There's something underlying there, right? Like, I get one off in these seasons, but if right. you actually look at the chart, it's pretty consistent. Like, I mean, they hit. I mean, the one with the Broncos, though, I mean, it is kind of weird. Like, the year that Vance Joseph took over, they started to spike a little bit more in ACL tears, and maybe that was the regime he brought with strength and conditioning or whatever it mm-hmm. might have been. But you do see trends with injuries. I mean, you know, the Vikings, for example, over the last decade have had like less than 50 injuries compared to like the Redskins or the Jets, who have had over 80. So there's some discrepancies in that, which I just wanted to highlight, points to the medical team, a little bit of the athletic trainers, the physical therapist, the strength and conditioning coach. That plays a vital role in the team as a whole.
So this Chargers every year thing, mm-hmm. right? They're always one of the most injured teams in the NFL.
Mm-hmm.
You know, there's this constant joke that the team is built on an Indian burial ground or whatever.
Right.
But like, if you're the owner of the Chargers, this is something that has to be coming from the medical staff, the strength and conditioning staff, like something as part of the organization that at this point, it's almost negligent not to have fixed it. Like, it's been such a long-standing, consistent thing. You are always at the high end of the injury chart in the NFL. We can deal with, like, we can fix this. The Vikings were good anyway and then hired the guy from the Rams who had been at the head of one of the least injured teams in the NFL for years. Like,
right.
you can go and find these guys to come in and fix the fact that everybody keeps going down.
Right. Well, I think the one thing that I have to highlight about the Chargers is their wins above replacement adjusted injury is high. So you hear about these big name players mm-hmm. that get injured, and it's more in the media. It's more evident that like they're going to be affected. Like, a good example is like the wins above replacement adjusted list has the Bengals as the number one affected team, basically meaning that their most significant players are injured and they impact the team that much more,
right.
rather than, you know, special teamers and stuff like that. So that's another thing with the Chargers, is it's more dealing with like, why are these really higher end significant players getting injured all the time? Is it just perchance that they're the type of players that they get on their team are more violent? I mean, you look at somebody like Mike Williams, who I feel like every other play he's catching a jump ball and landing on his back pretty hard.
Right.
Or is it something that's deeper rooted? And I can't tell you. Like, I don't know specifically what their routine in the offseason is, what they're doing. But I can tell you that like they have been really impacted by that like war injured list.
Yeah, it's important players that go down for them as well. Are
right.
they also high on the like the non-war adjusted list, just the frequency of
they're
injuries?
They're just middle of the road, which okay. is interesting. And actually, you know, the one thing about them is they I don't know if you really care about the climate and the all of that, but like, I mean, you know, they play in a warmer climate. They're basically, you know, all these guys that are playing are used to that. And then when they go and shift to somewhere else that's colder, that takes a toll on your body too. And that can create more injuries. There's been studies on that, like how players that tend to be used to playing in a cold climate can be healthier in cold weather play versus players that are used to warmer climates.
You legitimately get hardened by existing yeah. in Green Bay or Buffalo during
yeah.
the winter?
Oh, yeah. But Brett Favre, man.
I mean, right.
Yeah, exactly.
that's interesting.
Yeah, but I mean, it's really hard to tell if it is their rehab team and if it is some underlying, you know, coaching issues for the Chargers specifically.
But is there enough data at this point to conclude that this is something they should be able to fix? Like, obviously you're never going to be able to, you can't go, we hire this guy and we become the best, you know, injury team in the NFL. But you can say, okay, for a long period of time now, we have been bad or under, you know, below average. We can fix that.
Yeah, you'd hope so. Like, I mean, you'd hope so. I just used that example with the Broncos with 26
yeah.
ACLs. It's not like they were the highest at 26 and the least was the Saints at 20. I mean, there was a 20-person difference of ACL tear.
Yeah.
There's something, right? And I mean, there's enough data out there. There's enough personnel and there's enough medical teams around the United States that probably could look into that and identify some of the key issues. So
this is one of those things that, you know, we talk all the time about whoever is sort of setting the highest level agenda of an organization, whether this falls under the purview of the general manager or the team president or the owner, somebody needs to have identified this and said, this shouldn't happen. Like, this is something we can fix. Like, this is clearly a problem. This costs us games. This causes us to not do what we want to do. And all that stops us fixing it is essentially money and actually trying to do it.
Right.
We're happy with the status quo and we haven't changed anything.
Right. Yeah, you'd hope so. I mean, like, you and I probably, it's really easy to say, like, step back, sure, look at the big picture.
I mean, you need to find the guy, et cetera. Yeah. And you know, you've got a million other things to deal with. But, like, right, this is a pretty important one. You know?
I think even too, like, I mean, we can look at the overall picture and say, like, this team gets so many injuries. But when you're dealing with them in season, you're dealing with one injury at a time, one player at a time, and it probably is easy for them to just kind of get so focused, right, and centered on, like, that issue that they're neglecting the fact that, like, this has occurred for the last 5 years straight and we haven't done anything.
And that's probably very true for teams that, like, you don't sort of, but the Chargers have become such a meme with this, you know, or such a, like, it's become such a narrative that you would think minimum they would be aware of that and be looking into it. Whereas team like Denver, like, I was not aware of the ACL thing until you brought it up. So I can definitely imagine a team like Denver just being zeroed in and not even being aware of that. But a team like the Chargers, we're like, okay, it's now a running joke in the NFL that right, you guys are in this bucket.
Right.
At the very minimum, you would expect somebody in that organization to have looked into it and to have, you know, taken a swing at making some changes to fix this.
Have you guys seen these memes, these tweets coming out about us?
Whereas, you know, you can kind of paint a picture that Denver just hasn't noticed, actually, that we've got way more ACL injuries than a bunch of other people.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, I agree.
All right, anything else you want to touch on?
No, I think, I mean, pretty much that's it. There's some fascinating information out there with this. Like, you know, I got to say that, you know, between some of the sites that I use, like Draft Sharks or, you know, David Chow is a pro football doc that I do, and getting help from some of my, you know, assistants like Nathan Schramm and some of these guys that look into this. There's so much information out there. I think the hardest part is just collecting it. And then, you know, I'm really fortunate to be on the rehab side of things to kind of see it through. And it's just awesome to see that, like, you know, from football fan perspective, that we can look at the game from the lens of, like, injury and rehab and seeing how that's going to portray them into the next year as far as their progress and productivity on the field. I think it's pretty cool.
We talked a little bit about concussions before we went live. Do you envisage any future problems for Tua above and beyond, you know, again, the sort of the generic any other quarterback, because he dealt with what he dealt with last year? Mm-hmm. Like, we hear a lot about, you know, second impact syndrome and the fear of getting a second concussion in short order at the first. But is this similar to some of the other injuries we talked about, where once you have that break where you shut down, you don't do anything, you take the time needed, you are no longer at further risk or not at an increased risk? It's simply that acute period where you take the first hit, you put them back out, and that's the problem.
Yeah, I mean, this is where I see it becoming a bigger issue for somebody like Tua, is when we talk about CTE and that,
right,
chronic traumatic encephalopathy, which basically tells you that there's nerve damage in your brain. And the studies that are coming out now with these players, like, later in life, that is where I see some of the issues coming. I'm sure that Tua right now today feels great, and he probably couldn't tell you that he had any concussions last year. But I do think that the awareness of, like, CTE has come out to where he's definitely concerned about that. And that might be something where he gets number three just randomly, it gets a heightened risk.
But are those, so almost certainly Tua's situation that he dealt with last year created some kind of lasting impact in terms of, you know, but some kind of, like, CTE risk or whatever.
Yep.
Is that directly connected with an increased risk of getting the next concussion? Like, so if he has some kind of lasting long-term CTE impact that he's going to be dealing with later in life, or even that is simply there and doesn't necessarily manifest in symptoms or whatever, is that now definitely increasing a future risk of concussions, or are those two things slightly independent? Of, yeah, you can have the damage from the last time you got concussed, but it doesn't necessarily mean that you're more likely to get concussed, you know, next week.
Yeah, I mean, it's independent in the sense of, like, how much time is between, but I mean, studies show that the more concussions you have, the more susceptible you are.
Okay.
So I definitely could see if there was still any type of swelling or anything like that in the brain, that could be a major impact. I mean, it's just interesting with concussions too, the ways that quarterbacks are protected now. I mean, you're not really seeing a ton of helmet-to-helmet concussions. It used to be like 61%, and that's dropped all the way down to like 32% of concussions come from helmet-to-helmet. And so you look at Tua, it was helmet-to-ground,
yeah,
which takes about a third of the concussion percentage that you see nowadays. And what that tells me is that's kind of a chance. You know, he just gets hit wrong and he hits the ground wrong. It could be drastic implications for him. So
I mean, I think he's also at more risk for that because of his size. Mm-hmm. Like a guy like Josh Allen is, you're not capable of throwing him into the turf with the same level of force as you are a guy like Tua, because he weighs a fraction of the amount. Like he's more of a passenger in those situations than some of these other bigger quarterbacks are.
Absolutely.
That, I feel, puts him at a bigger risk.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, all of that kind of plays into it. You see somebody like him, and he's mobile too, right? So his chances of getting hit even outside the pocket now.
And he looks like, so he, a couple of things this offseason. Apparently he took up judo or something to learn like how to fall effectively,
yeah,
and not, you know, not brain himself on the ground. But also he appears to have done like the reverse Russell Wilson, where he's gotten thick in the offseason. Like he's put on some weight. And I'm kind of interested by that, in that I don't even know that it matters if it's good weight or not. Like if he's put on 20 pounds of fat, it might actually not matter. Like the point is, he's 20 pounds heavier, which means he's 20 pounds more difficult to throw at the turf if you're a defensive tackle. Like that probably is actually important for him.
Oh, yeah. I mean,
regardless of whether it's good weight or not. Like, sure, that the good weight versus bad weight might impact mobility or whatever, but like it actually might simply be beneficial to him to have just added mass.
Oh, yeah. I mean, I hear what you're saying, because I can remember just all the times that I watched Ben Roethlisberger just shrug off one-hand grabs on his jersey that would probably yank Tua down, right? So, I mean, I definitely see what you're saying there. And with the stuff that he's been doing in the offseason, that's all just, like, protection. You know, like, a great example is Kyler Murray, as mobile as he is one of the least hit quarterbacks when it comes to scrambling outside the pocket. Why? Because he knows how to slide. Maybe it's back to his baseball days.
Because he needs to.
Yeah, but he needs to, right? Where Tua needs to. He needs to learn how to get down.
Yeah.
And if he gets in the grasp of some of these linemen and he's thrown down like a rag doll, well, you're just at that risk now again. So,
all right, let's wrap this with the quick hitting things we talked about. Who are you most confident in for like a healthy, complete return this year?
Yeah, this goes just a little bit against the narrative with the age thing, but I'm most confident in Cooper Kupp. I've followed his rehab. He is a specimen when it comes to rehab. I mean, to the point of where like he's suggesting things to the physical therapist, like, hey, maybe we should try this, you know? So he is not only that as far as just that standard of just his intensity and his work ethic, but he had a really good surgery, that tightrope surgery that I talked about before. So the ankle instability that he was dealing with is pretty much gone. He's had a long time to rehab it. I see him coming back and having, you know, no issues as far as that or his ACL, since he's 2 years out. So I think that he's going to have a pretty good return. I'm confident.
All right, so flip side of that is, who are you least confident in for a healthy return? And we've covered some of these already.
Yeah, I would say Javonte for sure. We've talked about him and his knee issues. And then I would definitely also say Cam Akers. And the reason I think Cam is just, I didn't fall in love with him when I watched him come back from his Achilles. When you have an Achilles issue, you're worried about like sural nerve damage and having some of that. You're also worried about just the explosiveness of planting off that foot. I'm really interested to see what he can do. But if he's lost that explosiveness, you know, you could kind of see him being a middle tier running back and not kind of reach his potential.
What's one bold prediction for an injury recovery?
Yeah, like mine definitely is going to be, I think that the Broncos are going to be signing somebody to fill in for Javonte. I think it's all hype. And especially with Sean Payton, he has a great way to just like beat around the bush when it comes to talking to media.
Right.
But he had the most confusing comment I've ever heard. He was like, "Well, probably most likely get him back during the season." Well, I don't know what that means. So for me, I feel like they don't have a ton of confidence in where Javonte is going to be. I see that that's going to be a delayed recovery, and that you're going to come in with some other high-end free agent and just see how that feels.
All right, and then who's the player you're most intrigued, most interested to watch following an injury last year?
I got to say Brock Purdy, and the reason is he had just an interesting injury that you don't see a lot. He had a UCL repair with an internal repair, and so only two other quarterbacks actually had this exact surgery.
Which is not Tommy John, right?
Not Tommy John.
Specifically not that.
Yes, Tommy John is a full reconstruction.
Steve's very concerned about, because, you know, yes. More baseball pitcher.
Yeah, so it's not Tommy John. Tommy John is like a reconstructive, where this is the repair, where they actually use the body itself to do a lot of the healing, which might put him around a six-month recovery. But it's really interesting. The other quarterback that has had this surgery is Purdy's backup. So they're sitting there knowing that this is not necessarily the most common, but if everything goes according to plan, he's sitting there for a six-month recovery, maybe is back week one or two. The reason I'm most interested in
Purdy's backup being
he is not coming to my head right now. Brock Purdy's backup had the same UCL injury.
Backup with the 49ers.
Mm-hmm.
So Trey Lance or Sam Darnold.
Yeah, no, there's the other backup for him last year.
Oh, last? Who was there? Who was the backup last year? It was the same. I mean, he was number three in the list. They went through. Oh, Josh Johnson.
Yeah.
Right.
So what's going to happen for Purdy specifically is really interesting. I think that he has we watched his arm when he got hurt, and it just wasn't doing anything.
Right.
He has just an interesting recovery, because you can't look at it like baseball. You can't look at it like a Tommy John. I mean, those guys are pitching more, throwing at a higher velocity. I just want to see how his zip on the ball is. I want to see how he feels, how he can throw, and what he can get from that.
All right. I think unquestionably Brock Purdy is one of the most interesting guys to mm-hmm. watch. I mean, that whole dynamic of the 49ers quarterback room, what he looks like right out of the gate, how long it's going to take. I am really intrigued generally as to how much sort of wiggle room they give him, mm-hmm. you know, because the whole thing about Purdy is he was such a freak case in the first place of, you know, Mr. Irrelevant looking like the best quarterback they've had in a long period of time, but in a really small sample size, mm-hmm. in an offense that we know is kind of a cheat code for general quarterback play and success.
Right.
So if he looks like crap right away, like how long do they give him before they say either the injury or he just went on a crazy run last year is not, either one is not coming back like now. We right. need to make a change here. I am sort of fascinated by what that ease in process looks like and mm-hmm. how much time they give him if he doesn't look like he looked last year immediately. Like, I think that whole dynamic is going to be really interesting to watch, because right. like if he comes back and immediately struggles, and even if it's in training camp, like if he's struggling right out of the gate, the pressure on that team to make a change in some way, shape, or form is going to be huge.
Right, and then you're like, is Trey Lance ready? Or
right.
are we going to Sam Darnold, who has more similar style play?
And simply how much like commitment and determination do you have to give Brock Purdy the kind of time? Like if you're Kyle Shanahan and you know that it's going to look rough right out of the gate, you know, it's going to take him a little bit of time. Like, do you have the determination and the fortitude to stick with that as you watch all the interceptions happen, you know what I mean? Or as right. you watch like all the bad play, it's a little bit like those rookies where all the time you hear, we're gonna sit them year one, and then by week four it's like, I've seen enough of this crap, I don't care.
Yep.
Bin the game plan. I know we didn't plan on starting him, but we've got to throw him out now. Like, even knowing that this is like, I know this is the plan, he's not going to look good right away, we're going to ride through it, we're going to get to the other side, then we get it great. Like, 2 weeks into that, are you like, okay, it was fine in theory, but when the rubber meets the road, we're making the change.
Yeah, especially
Lance, get out there.
Yeah, especially with all the weapons they have. Like, they've got to find a way to utilize them. And Nick Mullins was the backup. It wasn't. Yeah,
okay.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
And he had that same surgery, the UCL. So that comparison there. But no, I 100% agree. It's going to be interesting. I think he's kind of on. It's weird to think a player that productive last year is kind of on a hot seat, but he is. I think the team is set up to do a lot of big things, and they have such an interesting quarterback situation. Like, everybody is kind of talking about Brock Purdy and his injury, and then I'm sitting there like, don't forget, Trey Lance broke his ankle. Like, he's still coming back.
Right.
So you have two quarterbacks that are banged up, one that you had a huge high investment in draft capital, and then you have Sam Darnold sitting there just like, hey, I'm still here, right? You know, so it's going to be interesting.
And Darnold obviously has dealt with his own injuries in the past. He's had some significant ones as well.
Yeah.
All right, Vic, that's been the show today. Yeah, thanks so much for coming down to the studio here and educating us all a little bit on injuries and all that kind of stuff.
Well, thanks for having me, man. I really appreciate it. It's been fun.
Awesome.
Been
fun. So hopefully you guys have enjoyed the injury show as well. We'll be back tomorrow with Trevor Sikkema. Don't forget to check out the YouTube channel and go find that video of Steve and me attempting rugby skills and looking tragically unfit and unhealthy and just disgusting. But go see it. It's fun. And a big shout out to the Houston Sabercats of Major League Rugby for hooking us up for those videos. That's been the show today. We'll talk to you tomorrow.